Comments and views expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. And those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome. We're glad to have you. I think you're going to be delighted that you tuned in. And I think you're going to experience something that you'll want to experience day after day, night after night, depending on what time zone you're in. I think you'll make a habit out of it. Now, if you're brand new, you need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter. It's available for you for subscribing. It's that simple. You just subscribe. It's absolutely free. And to do that, go over to kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see in big red letters the link that says subscribe free to the K-Files e-zine. Just click that and subscribe. And then also you need to click, you're going to get a confirmation email, has a link in it. You need to click that confirming that you did intend to subscribe. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, all right? You know, there is a lot of stuff happening in the world of genetics. You know, I've been reading up on that in the past couple of weeks. It's been a while since I visited that subject in terms of really doing some reading and what's happening. And it's really just amazing what's happening in the field of genetics. Now, one of the things that I did talk about recently is that geneticists have found how to genetically alter yeast. Now, yeast is a living organism, and the geneticists have figured out how to genetically alter yeast so that its lifespan increases tenfold. And they were saying that the same thing could be done with humans. They didn't expect that it would increase our lifespan tenfold, but they did think that pretty soon we'll be commonly living to be 120 years old. That's a big, big development. And they said eventually we may get to the point where we live to be 800 years old. But the 120 years is certainly within reach. So that's a big thing. Another big thing that's happening in the world of genetics, and you should be aware of it, I mentioned it, but I want to mention it again. Over in Britain, they have successfully cloned several embryos using DNA from three different people. And I mentioned that I think that bodes ill for us, actually, because once that becomes possible, you can obscure all kinds of crime evidence and all kinds of possibility to identify a person. Right now, DNA is used in courts just about like we use fingerprints, right? But you know what? Once you start mixing the DNA of two or three people, what you've got is a mess in the criminal justice system. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Walter Bosley this evening. Walter Bosley has run into strange, strange things that may indicate an active program to suppress information he's trying to get to you. We'll be back right after this.
Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel OnStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments. So click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. I'll be there in the morning light. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest is Walter Bosley. He'll join us here online in just a moment. I want to say that I really, really appreciate all the letters, all the emails of concern this past week. I was we got this little virus, this little flu bug going around, and I've had a touch of that. And it did affect my ability to have voice for an extended period of time. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. We're back in the saddle again. My guest this evening, Walter Bosley. He's been with us before. You will remember that we talked with him about a book that he wrote years ago. And he was told, don't even think about trying to publish that. And it had to do with Mars. Okay, so you remember when we talked with Walter about that? Well, now he's got a new book that's out, and it's been a heck of a journey getting it out. And not only has it been a heck of a journey getting it out, there seems to be some evidence, he thinks, of maybe an active campaign to suppress this book and keep you from knowing about it. So we'll get him to tell us about it. Walter, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks, Kevin. It's good to be here again.
The book that I just mentioned is, you've talked about this on this show. In fact, a couple of times you've talked about this material when we talked about ley lines and you talked about the fact that there is an intersection of three major ley lines out in California, and that they happen to intersect right in what we call Disneyland, and that King Arthur's Carousel was built right over that intersection. You've talked about that, and we'll talk about it some more tonight. But you told us that you had a book that was about to be published. It was coming out, and that it had a lot of information in it, and regarding your research. And we have been expecting it to come out. It was somewhat delayed, but it is out now. That sets up the situation. Tell us, what's the deal? What's happened here?
Well, if to remind the listeners, the book is Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom, which I first talked about back in late September of 2006 when I was on Coast to Coast Live with Ian Punnett. And as you said, I've been on various shows, including this one, talking about our research as we've been working on this book and investigating it. And finally, we get the book done. And we had originally talked to one publisher, and then that who was kind of expressed interest, and then, you know, pretty much said, nah, not interested in that. And then the next publisher we talked to was definitely interested in learning more, and then was, you know, expressed interest in with some changes and revisions, maybe in their words. You know, they wanted to give us a contract and let's go forward with this thing. And the revisions were made.
And let me say that you provided me with a copy of the email in which they said that. And they actually did say, you know, that if you made those revisions, that they would be interested in doing a contract with you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, that was the way we read it. Now, you know, I want to caveat everything I say with that, you know, I'm not completely naive here. I understand that, you know, there's when things are said verbally, it's not binding and such. That I understand. But, you know, being a publisher myself, for those who don't understand the publishing business, the way it works is generally when you start talking a certain language, what you're doing is you're kind of, in an informal way, you're kind of getting that author, you know, or authors to be, to some degree, tied in with working with you. And when they're working with you, that means they're not out there working, you know, someone else, meaning another publisher. And, you know, you're kind of working towards what you believe is likely going to be the ultimate goal of, you know, this company's going to publish you. And, you know, weeks can go by in that process, you know, sometimes months. But when it gets to a certain point, you know, you're pretty responsive to each other, to each other's communications. And what was interesting about this particular situation was that, you know, there was some, you know, responsiveness that was, you know, fairly timely in a very common way. And after the revisions were made, no response whatsoever. Not even a courtesy response that, oh, thank you, we received the version of the book, we'll take a look at it, you know, nothing like that at all. No response to two follow-up emails over the course of 2 weeks. No response to phone calls to the publisher's personal cell phone and their office where a message was left with a human being. And to this day, I check every day, and I just check right before coming on the show, still no response whatsoever. Now, I did last week when Greg Bishop and I, my friend and co-author on this, agreed that, you know what, let's just do it through my new company, Corvos Books. And I sent them an email saying, hey, you know what, we think we're going to go elsewhere. No response to that at all. So it looks like just kind of a complete shutdown or lack of interest in our book. And that is not what was expressed before, you know, in the weeks before that. So, you know, that was just kind of a little odd. And so we decided that we would have the title be the first title to inaugurate the new company, Corvos. which will specialize in nonfiction books on strange phenomena and a lot of the things discussed here and other shows. And we released it Friday. And I went on a particular site through the site that I make the book available on, which they recommended, to do kind of a do-it-yourself press release. That's what it is. It's a press release service called PR.com. And I put together a little press release. You know, I was a journalism major in college, and I've been doing this kind of stuff for years. And believe me, when you're an Air Force officer, you learn how to write this kind of stuff. You know, I know how to do a press release. I'm a pretty decent, you know, sales guy. And what was interesting was it got rejected, just summarily rejected within less than 24 hours, I believe.
Now, did they give you any reason? Did they say why they were rejecting it?
That was it. The one reason they gave, it was in one sentence. We rejected you because of the claims of this book. And I thought, whoa, you know, what makes this book any different from any other book? I mean, any book, that nonfiction we're talking, is really just an assertion of claims by the author, and it's understood. It's, you know, it's understood to be so. Now, I responded with an email to them in return, you know, asking, well, you know, could you be a little bit more specific? You know, what do you, you know, it kind of startled me. I never expected this from an online, you know, press release company. I, you know, in all honesty, I didn't have great, you know, expectations that this would get me on CNN or anything, because I was using their free level of service, and, you know, I'd never heard of them. You know, I'd never heard of PR.com before this.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, okay, it'll be, you know, what it's worth. But, I, you know, to be so summarily rejected. So I did a little work. They never responded to my first email reply, you know, response to them. I never got any kind of further elaboration. So I drafted up another one subsequent to that, and it got rejected with the same exact explanation. Because of the claims of the book, verbatim, and still no response to my questions regarding the
book. Well, I find that curious and disturbing.
Yeah.
You know, Oliver Stone put out a movie called JFK that basically claims that JFK was assassinated by the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, people say, okay, well, that's fiction. Oh, well, to some people it is. To some people, that's certainly one of the theories that's out there that a lot of people believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie makes that claim. It asserts that that's the case.
Right.
All right. I wonder if a press release for that movie would have been rejected by PR.com. I wonder.
I
read your book, by the way. I thought it was fascinating. And, you know, this book makes no claims of Walt Disney being a nefarious individual. This book makes no claims that Walt Disney had personal knowledge of any ley lines or personal knowledge of any device that could amplify the energies of those ley lines, etc. I mean, your book doesn't claim that. Your book claim that there was anything evil involved.
Exactly, and we still, and that's what I would like to emphasize about the book, is we are not saying that there's any dark occultic thing going on. First, let's also state that the word occult simply means something that's hidden or secret, and that doesn't necessarily imply dark, but its common usage, you know, has become so. So, you know, anytime, you know, if I even use the word occult, I mean it in its purest sense, hidden. And, you know, the entire book and the conclusion of the book, and I'll tell you right now, that this was possibly done, if it was indeed done, what we talk about in the book, I personally don't see it as a negative thing. I see it as this wonderful, fascinating, amazing thing if it were done. And you know, I feel... If it were done on purpose, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel honored if, you know, I experienced phenomena related to this, if it were done, to me, it's just, you know, it's one of the most interesting and fascinating and incredible experiences of my life. And I certainly can't be the only person, you know, who's encountered this. But, yeah, the book is not a negative indictment on Walt Disney in any way, or even the man, C.V. Wood is his name, who we claim is the one who very likely was instrumental in making it happen. We present in the book the evidence that supports that this man would have done, could have done this, or would have been interested in doing this. So
yeah,
there's nothing in it.
I want us to get into C.V. Wood just a little bit, and the information that you had in your book about him was very interesting.
Yeah.
His links to the foundation, I can't remember the name of it.
The Mind Science Foundation, established by the legendary Tom Swift.
Yeah, and he was affiliated with that. He was very much into mind expansion. And I want us to get into him a little bit, but I'm very, very puzzled about this response from the press release company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are at PR.com. press releases that claim all kinds of things.
Oh, yes.
Now, you did a little research on that.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go to break, we've got 5 minutes or so, 6 minutes. Let's talk about some of these other press releases that you found that make some claims about some rather fantastic things that we talk about here on this show.
Well, if you go to PR.com and look in their all press releases listing, there you'll see there's a little search that you can search their section of press releases. You put in Bigfoot, okay? You will find press releases pop up on publications and events and things that are announced through press releases on PR.com regarding Bigfoot. And you put in UFOs, okay, or UFO, and you will see press releases. One is for a MUFON-sponsored event and other things relating to UFOs, flying saucers. And also you put in a cult, and something pops up where they approved a press release on a book written by, you know, an occult author. And when you read these press releases and you read the one, you know, both versions that were submitted on our book, you have to ask yourself, well, what makes, you know, what these people are saying that they're going to talk, that what these people are saying they're going to say about UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts, that's another one, any more credible than what we say our book is about, and any more credible by how it's stated? It just seems kind of odd, you know, that they would,
well, you know,
some claims are okay, some are not.
On the one hand, I have to say, in fairness, and being reasonable and logical and rational about things, I have to say that it is possible that the actions of that publisher and the actions of this PR firm are purely coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
It's a possibility.
Sure.
However, with the background that I have, once I start seeing, it doesn't establish a pattern yet, but once I start seeing things happen, even if it's a coincidence, I have to say, is there a pattern here?
Well, this is why I go ahead and bring this up kind of, I want to say, early in the game. What I find interesting, talk about patterns, is, I mean, within 24 hours of us releasing the book, I experience this that I'm telling you that I experienced with this PR.com. And, you know, it's kind of a funny little instance. Now, the way I am is I'm a little bit more proactive. I don't want to wait for 6 months or a year of this kind of stuff to go on before I stand up and go, aha, see, I kind of have a good intuition, and, you know, if it's nothing, I'll be the first to say, well, I guess it turned out to be nothing. If none of this kind of thing ever happens again, and, you know, I'm able to talk about it and get press releases, I'll be the first to admit, okay, you know, maybe I was coming off a little paranoid in that moment. I was wrong. But, you know, sometimes it's good to kind of nip things in the bud and, you know, maybe point something out as your intuition says, hey, there might be something here. One other thing I'd like to say, it was brought to my attention by someone very intelligently that, you know, perhaps it's the fact that it's available physically through Lulu.com. I'd like to say that, without sounding scolding, you know, we're in a new era of media. And, you know, I'll tell you this, Lulu.com, can anybody go on there and publish their book? Yes, they can. However, our book specifically is written by two guys with a reputation. One is Greg Bishop, who's been published by Simon & Schuster and is probably well-known to most of your audience, number one. Number two, our book is released through my publishing company. I've been in publishing for 5 years. I know how to present a decent book, and, you know, so there is that filter. The publisher in this is Corvos Books. Lulu.com is simply the means through which we're making it available. And that's only because our dealings with a couple of other publishers were kind of, no pun intended, Mickey Mousing us. And we decided, you know what, rather than fiddle fart around with, you know, two or three more publishers who want to tap dance for their fear of the mouse, let's just, this is important. We've been talking about it. Let's get it out there, you know, under our own label. So I'm asking people not to judge the book by the little tiny, you know, by the link they go to, you know, but by judging it on its merits and what I say about it and taking a look at it, you know, for yourself. Now, I say that it was brought up. Someone said, well, maybe PR.com kind of looks down their nose at anything from Lulu. So, you know, they don't want to be associated with it. On one hand, I see the logic in that. On the other hand, I look at the other things that they've released press releases on, and I just don't think that flies. You know, I just don't think that flies. So, you know, that said on that issue.
Well, I think it's bizarre. And, of course, I think there's the possibility, if this is a pattern of suppression or attempted suppression of information, if it is, then it would indicate that you hit the nail right on the head. There's something in there that scares the bejesus out of somebody.
And I'd like to, you know, and we'll do this after the break, but, you know, there's been another little incident that, you know, I've told you about that, you know, I'll throw out there after the break that is just one more, you know, the phrase preponderance?
I guess,
is that the word? Just one more little stick of evidence to throw on the pile of consideration to make you go, I wonder.
All right. Well, you know, it's disturbing to me that there would be any kind of a concerted effort to keep people from getting information, keep people from publishing information. That's really disturbing. You know, I mean, this is supposed to be a place where we believe in freedom of speech. Certainly, it's not the government doing it, I don't think, but still, suppression of information is not cool. We'll be back. We'll be back right after this.
Woke up this morning, had a strong desire to get this out. Never had the struggle to understand just what life's about. When I hold my six-string, I close my eyes and I absorb. Just have to figure out the secrets of the magic door. I tell, so I huff and I puff and I scream, so I smile and I grin. I believe.
We are back, and we are talking this evening with Walter Bosley. Let's go back to the phone line and Walter Bosley. Walter, you said there was another incident that had happened. Why don't you share that with us?
Well, the stuff with PR.com, you know, was going on over the weekend, and that was interesting enough. But this morning at about 11:30, now, in my family, I live in the same area with a couple of my sisters and where my mom lives, and we use each other's cars a lot. You know, it's just kind of a family thing, you know. And a car that I have used frequently, my mom was driving today. And at 11:30, I get a call, and she'd been in a single-car accident, rolled the car over completely, and was at the hospital. She's at the hospital now, and she's okay. She's okay, and it sounds like from what she described to me, she had a front tire blowout. But you know, you know, I'm releasing this book, you know, with implications of. The mouse is out there. Will they be unhappy? And this little thing's going on with PR.com. And then, you know, this very morning of the day I'm going to be on your show, she ends up in a single car accident. And she can't remember right now the very specifics of what happened other than when the front end, just barely an instant of the front end freaking out. I haven't yet asked her if, you know, right before it happened, she saw a jalopy with a driver with big black round ears, but, you know, it's, and I'm not saying, you know, folks, oh my gosh, they're out to get me. I'm just standing back and I'm looking, and not without some bit of a smile on my face, and I'm thinking, you know, I've been talking about this book. I finally release it, and, you know, there's A, then B, and, you know, it's just kind of an interesting little tidbit that's out there that I kind of throw out there. You know, could it be coincidence? Absolutely, positively, it could be a coincidence. Am I certain? No, I can't be at this point. But I'm not the kind of guy that's going to, believe me, lose sleep over, you know, the things we're talking about. But it is just an interesting another little, you know, log to throw on that fire, you know, we think might be there. Just something to note.
All right, let's get into C.V. Wood a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you shared with us on a previous show that he is the engineer that Walt Disney hired to build Disneyland.
Yes. He was born in 1921 in Texas, went into aerospace engineering, and eventually ended up at the Stanford Research Institute, the famous SRI International, which, as I've said before, many of your listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with. They have been involved in all sorts of interesting technology, much of it defense-related, including things like backscatter radar, the development of GPS, all sorts of interesting things, to include the development and research on scientific remote viewing, which certainly is one of the more, in our times, famous products of, you know, human consciousness expansion, you could say. And they were, you know, involved in the roots of all these things back, you know, clear back into the 50s. And C.V. Wood was an engineer for them at the time that the Disneys went to SRI to get consultation. Because SRI would provide, you know, corporate clients with consultations on, you know, where to build, what the demographics were to aim their product and services at, that kind of thing. Very down-to-earth, rational, logical things. The Disneys went to SRI. They provided several recommendations for possible locations closer to the San Diego area, more further up into Los Angeles, actually out to San Bernardino or Riverside, but also this particular little piece of property in Anaheim, about 160 acres in orange groves. And C.V. Wood was really excited about being involved with this Disneyland project, and he really urged Walt to, you know, to get this Anaheim property. What's interesting is one of the sources I talked to who was acquainted with Mr. Wood, talked with him on more than one occasion during his lifetime, he said that the story Wood gave him was that the original concept was not to be the big Disneyland as we know it. It was something that was a little bit smaller, even the concept that was allegedly, you know, going to be built there in Anaheim, and that Wood had indicated to him, or alleged that he had kind of pissed Walt off because he went a little bit farther in acquiring the property on the Disney company's behalf than Walt realized he was doing, and that kind of thing. But it just illustrates how involved and how excited C.V. Wood was, and it illustrates how just adamant that Wood was that the park be built on that spot. Now, why is that important? Well, Wood works for the organization, the engineering firm, that was involved in things like GPS and remote viewing and such. Well, I'll tell you, if there's any outfit that would have been aware of these Earth energy lines intersecting at that spot, it's a good bet SRI had that information in their files.
And now, let's just be clear, though, that at this point, that's a speculation on your point.
That's a speculation on my part. I'd like to think of it as an educated speculation. When you study things about these Earth energy lines and electromagnetics and things to do with geomorphology and geography and such, it makes sense that, like I said, if anyone was aware of there's these energy lines and they intersect at this point, my guess is, it's a good bet. My best speculation is SRI would likely know something like that. And therefore, it's, again, even more possible in that line of thinking that C.V. Wood, their engineer, who was pushing that piece of property, would also have known it. Now, is there a conventional explanation? There always is, Kevin. You know that. There's always the conventional explanation. And in this particular case, it's that, they knew. They were able to project that the population growth in Anaheim would be perfectly located, to take advantage of. That was a good location to put the park because you'd get everybody in Southern California. And essentially, that's true. And I firmly believe that was part of it, of course. What's interesting is, when you get into these Earth energy lines and some of the civil engineering things that have been done allegedly based on the knowledge of these Earth energy lines, it makes you even more certain that the conventional explanation was part of it, because manipulating the energies in these lines creates the elements that makes it a good business decision. It draws people there, and it has to do with energies and drawing people and rejuvenation and thriving. And a better writer than I on this subject, Sesheri, gets really into that in his upcoming book, The Handprint of Atlas, which will be coming out in probably about another month. And that's really exciting, and that goes deeper into the more of the technical explanation of what we're talking about here. But, I firmly believe that... And I say I believe, based on our research, that C.V. Wood very likely knew about the intersection through his employment with SRI, and whoever was behind it, whoever was behind him, for whatever reason, he saw an opportunity to do something rather extraordinary.
All right, we've got about 3 minutes until our next break, actually 2.5 minutes. Talk to us a little bit about this foundation that he was a member of, this Mind Expansion Foundation.
The Mind Science Foundation, yes. It was founded in 1958 by Tom Slick. And he was the legendary... gentleman who was, this multimillionaire, and he was also the guy who for many years was out there searching for Bigfoot, coincidentally, and was very much into human consciousness, human awareness phenomena. Now, this gentleman was also according to the information I found through Mind Science, on the board of SRI prior to the founding of the Mind Science Foundation. So here you have, and here you have Slick with a connection to SRI, a direct connection to SRI during the years that C.V. Wood was working there when the Disneys hired him away. And subsequently, in 1958, when the Mind Science Foundation was founded, C.V. Wood went over there. And according to one of the sources in the book, C.V. Wood was one of the top officers of the Mind Science Foundation, based in his home state of Texas, and incidentally located near another of these Earth Energy lines that runs straight smack dab and ends at the Alamo, interestingly enough.
That's on one end. What's at the other end?
The other end, it extends up, yikes, you would ask me that. I don't have that specific answer on the other end. But I will say that a little farther north on that same line that ends at the Alamo is located Six Flags Over Texas, which was the second most successful amusement park that C.V. Wood engineered and got started. And it also is located on one of these lines. And interestingly enough, it is located on what we call Latitude 33, just like Disneyland. C.V. Wood did about four or five amusement parks, and the two that were located on Latitude 33 exist to this day and are considered great successes, one of them being Disneyland, the greatest success of them all. The other one, Six Flags Over Texas, and the other ones he designed that were not located within this zone of that latitude, they're not with us anymore.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back, we will continue discussing this amazing book with Walter Bosley.
Did you know the Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. Welcome back. We're talking with Walter Bosley. And Walter, when we went away, we were talking about C.V. Wood and some of the amusement parks that he's been responsible for. The two most famous, Disneyland out in California and Six Flags Over Texas. You know, I went to Six Flags Over Texas the year it opened. And I got to tell you, it was a lot better. It really was. I went every year, sometimes two or three times in the year, for several years. And I saw it as it began to change. It was a whole lot better in the beginning than it is today, in my opinion. I guess other people might have other opinions, but it was a fascinating place in the beginning. And well, you know, now it's just got a lot of rides, you know.
Yeah. Well, that shouldn't surprise me at all, based upon this research I've been doing, because, originally it had the imprint of this man we're talking about, and look how Disneyland has changed. I'd like to say that what we're talking about in this book was only operational for a period of 27 years, and that was from when Disneyland opened until 1982, when they redesigned Fantasyland and actually moved the carousel from its original position. And the carousel is the motive element. It's the thing that makes all of this contraption we're talking about work, this device. And it wouldn't surprise me that if any physical changes were made to Six Flags Over Texas from C.V. Wood's original design, that it would experience a change like you're talking about, because Disneyland certainly has.
There have been, I would say, rather extensive changes. But it's lost a lot of its charm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
you mean Six Flags, right?
Yeah. I've been to Disneyland. I can tell you, I was not impressed.
Disneyland, you know, I've been going there all my life. My first trip was, I believe, 1966, and it has distinctly something not good. And you know, a lot of this is overt stuff. You go there, and for the longest time, and still today, Tomorrowland is just this dead end. And we comment on that in the book, by the way, make an interesting commentary on that, in the vein of here you have a park that presents, you know, the past, the present, fantasy, that kind of thing, and tomorrow. And, you know, it's kind of a comment on society. When in your microcosm, and Disneyland is a microcosm of the American vision, that Western civilization world, it's a microcosm. And if in your microcosm, your Tomorrowland is a dead zone that seems empty and no reason to go there, gosh, what does that say about your civilization, you know? And, you know, I don't want to put, you know, more, you know, glamour, glory, or whatever on Disneyland as a commentary on our civilization. But, you know, it is, you know, it's possibly, you know, it's a metaphor or whatever you want to say, an allegory to it. But Disneyland since 1982, distinctly, for instance, in the last few years I've gone, you see paint chipped off of railings and worn off. You see grime. There's actually grime at places in Disneyland. And I got to tell you, during Walt's lifetime and for several years after his passing, you never saw that kind of thing at Disneyland. They would steam clean the damn place every night. And in recent years, it's really, you know, gone to the dogs. It's an interesting observation that it coincidentally comes after the original design was physically altered. And that's another thing we get into in the book.
All right, well, let's focus a little bit more on C.V. Wood.
Mm-hmm.
He winds up as a important member of the Mind Science Foundation?
Yes.
What do they do?
They are one of the foremost benefactors of scientific research and studies into human consciousness. You can go to their website, just do any web search, Mind Science Foundation or Mind Sciences Foundation, whichever it is. I apologize for getting the middle word there wrong at the moment. You look it up, and they have some heavy hitters, some names you've heard of, you know, associated with what they do. And it's real. The impression that I'm left with is this is a very corporate face that they've put on, you know, studying things like, you know, the concepts from the movie Altered States, you know, things like that. And again, I'm not taking away from the work they do because, you know, from what I see, it's really fascinating and important stuff. But you can't let the very corporate, you know, legitimate, very mainstream-looking mask and dressing they put on it take away from the potential of what you're reading that they do. I mean, if you really dig into their site and see what it is they're involved in, this, the expansion of human consciousness and human awareness, is exactly what they're all about. And this device that we say that C.V. Wood, engineered into Disneyland, is exactly that. It expands human consciousness and awareness. And the fact that he was one of their chairman, I believe, in 1958-59, you know, one of their higher-ups, and the fact that he was a friend with the man who founded it, you know, he was into these things. He was very, very much interested in these things. And is it just coincidence that the things we're finding at the most successful place he ever had a hand in engineering, these things are part and parcel of, you know, we're talking, you know, Jungian stuff, you know, like Carl Jung would have loved, you know, what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that you talk about in your book is the possibility that this thing actually opens a portal. When I say this thing, we're talking about a carousel spinning. Where it's centered right on top of the intersection of these energy lines, these ley lines that are in the Earth. And you talk about the possibility that this actually opens up a sort of a time portal, right?
We talk about that. We in light of the experience that happened to me back in the early 80s, we have to approach that and address it, and we do. I can tell you, you know, if it came to it, if someone wanted to, you know, put me on the polygraph or whatever, you know, because I've already done essentially the signed affidavit by writing the book, you know, I can tell you definitely what I experienced and the subsequent discovery of for myself of the works of Alfred Watkins. We definitely had to approach the possibility that there was a bend in time-space, whatever you want to call it. And Mr. Watkins and who knows what else. One chapter discusses the spectral, the ghost and haunting activity associated with Disneyland by some witnesses. And it really opens up to all sorts of possibilities when you're looking at the fact that it deals with human consciousness, particularly where other dimensions are concerned, or if not literally other dimensions, just human consciousness being aware of a little bit more of the spectrum of physical reality than is common.
We talked about, and we're headed into a break now, we talked about the possibility that there may be a campaign of suppression being waged against you to keep this information from getting out into the public. When we come back from the break, I'd like to address specifically who would benefit from that? Why would they do it? And do you really think that that's what's going on? But we're going to head off into a break here in just a few seconds. I want to remind everyone as we go to break that this is the top of the hour break, and that means that when we come back, we will open the telephone lines. Telephone line is toll-free throughout North America, and it is 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. If you have experienced anything strange out at Disneyland, sort of a time warp or whatever, we want to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment for Walter, we want to hear from you. I think it's interesting that he can come on this show and talk about all that strange stuff over at Mars and no problem. And then when he tries to put this book out that just sort of mentions Disneyland, doesn't say anything bad about Disneyland, now he's got all these problems. What do you think about that? 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. We'll be back right after this.
Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We're talking with Walter Bosley, and we're talking about a book that he's just published,
And he's begun to encounter some strange things. Maybe coincidence, maybe not. But it certainly seems to point towards, anyway, seems that it could point towards the possibility that somebody's trying to suppress this information from getting to you. Walter, do you think that in your heart of hearts, what do you think? Do you think that's what's up?
Well, you have to consider some things first. Number one, the most realistic in most people's minds is that, you know, Disney is the second largest communications company on the face of this planet. They're huge, okay? They wield a lot of power. They can sue the hell out of people. And they've done some pretty petty things, like sending cease and desist letters to nursery schools, according to one source I read, in telling them to paint over their images of Mickey and Donald on the wall, you know, in a nursery school, for crying out loud. That's, you know, one story I read. And it could be just that these, you know, sources I'm using are just basically afraid of the mouse, so to speak. They just don't want to take a chance. They're like, you know what, we don't want to take a chance of them coming after us, so screw it, we're not touching this Disney stuff. It could honestly be just that. Another thing it could be is, let's say it were Disney, what stake would Disney have in worrying about a guy like me? Well, here I am writing this book that smacks of the O word, occult, and you have a lot of, you know, fundamentalist Christians in America and folks that, you know, do the boycott strategy. And, you know, Disney doesn't want to deal with all the other problems they've had in the recent years. They don't want to deal with, you know, the fundamentalists, you know, saying, oh, my gosh, Disney's, you know, this occult playground. You know, they don't want to lose business. They don't want to have to deal with that. So,
and I can understand that.
Yeah, it would be in their interest because it affects their bottom line. So there would be that motive for Disney. The other possibility, if you discount that people are afraid of just simply the possibility of being sued by Disney for anything being said that's not authorized by them, you discount that, and you discount any of Disney's, you know, very logical, sound, you know, concerns over being boycotted against by a certain demographic. If you take that out, well, then what else could it be? The next thing that comes to mind is there something in the book that is dead on, that or is too close to the truth, that is something they don't want out? And there could be a gamut of that. It could be that maybe they were involved in some type of, let's throw it out there, some type of maybe government project that wasn't a bad thing, but they agreed to be involved in it, you know, through... You know,
well, or maybe did not agree, maybe did not know.
Or maybe did not know, and the evidence that I found regarding Walt Disney with this is that's very possible, and maybe they just don't want it known, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's in that realm of we've done something to where we've stumbled on something, as it were, that's close to the truth. And then, of course, the ultimate is that we have found something that is bigger than even Disney, and it's something that people aren't supposed to know.
We'll get to that in just a moment. Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, yes. This is Kevin in Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin.
Hey, it's good to see you back there, Kev.
Oh, I'm feeling better.
Walter, was there anything about... is there anything you know about the design on of Paramount Canada's Wonderland? Did the ones that designed Disneyland and that Six Flags in Texas, did they design the one in Canada's Wonderland? Because I have a very weird experience when I was at Canada's Wonderland when I was 14 years old.
Well, that's very interesting. What year was that?
1998.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. No, there's not anything that C.V. Wood was involved in building that one. In fact, Mr. Wood himself died in 92. But that's not to say that, you know, just because he used this at Disneyland and some other places, this appears to be a technology that, you know, is used certainly by more people than those who built Disneyland, and certainly by more people who, you know, than just C.V. Wood. Some other research that's been done that's more expansive substantiates that. And as I said, Sechery gets into those who may be involved with this on a much higher level than Disneyland. But I'd be real interested to what was your specific experience?
I'm sorry, he's gone. I wish he was still with us. I pushed the wrong button here, and he's gone.
Oh, gosh.
But, Kevin, if you wish to call back in, please do. I accidentally cut you off.
And if he can't do that, he can send me an email. I'd love to hear his account.
Yeah. And I wanted to hear his account as well. The possibility that this is a known technology and that it is used on purpose and is bigger than Disney.
Mm-hmm.
What could that be?
Well, you know, now we're getting into, your perceptions of reality. You're getting into what people are willing to accept, as far as within their comfort zones. It could be as big as our very perception of what our world is, of what our origins are, of what our purpose is, of our very identities.
The whole thing about our origins is such a touchy subject. You know, you have Darwin, who writes a book and says, just kind of speculating and thinking, and says, you know, it could be that we came from swamp scum. And it set the world on fire. You know, the debate has raged ever since. The whole thing about our origins is the way that people are so touchy about that just really is an amazing thing to me to watch. You know, just to watch how people react to that. It is an amazing thing. All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, it's Kevin again. You asked me to call back.
Please.
Oh, good.
We want to hear what happened to you.
Well, I was there with on the Grade 8 Toronto trip. I graduated from elementary school. We all go down to Toronto. And the last thing we did on the trip was we all went to Wonderland. We all parted with Mason. I was with my best friend. And, well, my best friend at the time, this incident messed him up mentally. Like, he was never the same afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to make this as short as I possibly can. Well, we run into somebody. We never saw her before in our lives, this girl. And apparently nobody else saw her. I'm trying to explain this here. And she comes up to us, and she says, calls me by my name and my friend's name. She says, how are you guys doing? You know, you guys are here with your school and all right. And I said, okay. And we were just talking with her. And the people around us were looking at us weird, as if like we're two people talking to the air. And then one of my classmates was up ahead. And we didn't know this person from a hole in the wall. And I said, okay. We just let it be. Somebody figured somebody's playing a prank on us, you know, coming up to us and that. And about a little bit further on, later on, about half an hour later, we're on the other side of the park, and this girl comes up to us again. And she says, hey, Kevin and my friend, I'm not going to name him, says, I hope you guys are having fun and whatnot, okay. And I said, okay, I'm going to find out who this girl is. She started walking away. She walked around one of the game stands, and I was, like, right on her tail. I was only, like, maybe a couple steps behind her. I got around the game stand, and she was gone.
Well, what do you think about that, Walter?
Well, I'll tell you, it was reminding me of those incidents of people encountering a gentleman by the name of Indrid Cold, encounters which I grew up hearing about, and then of course were kind of touched on in the movie The Mothman Prophecies. But you know, he would come up to people and he knew their names, and you know, he would of course make his enigmatic statement, "I will see you in time." What he just described, was classic description of an encounter, if you go back to certain traditions, they would call it, you know, the fairy folk. But actually, when you really study the details, that's a classic encounter with, you know, these supposed interdimensional beings. You know, if you read Jacques Vallée, Passport to Magonia, and other similar things like John Keel. Yeah, that's a classic experience there.
Kevin, thanks for calling back with that. Very interesting.
Yeah, I know. Just one more point about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what happened? Because my best friend saw it too, and nobody else saw this. Because we had a couple of our classmates, and they said, "Did you see that girl that was talking to us?" And they said, "What are you talking about?" They said, "We were just looking at us and waving at us. We were talking to this girl." She said, "You look like you guys were talking to the air." And I said, "No."
What was her physical description? What were her features like?
Oh, she looked to be in her late teens, early 20s. She was about 5'6". She had shoulder length black hair. She spoke with a Montreal accent.
Mm-hmm.
And
fair skin, dark skin.
Ooh, tanned Caucasian skin.
Okay. What were her? What would you call her in her features, her actual facial features? Caucasian, Asian. What would you say?
Yeah, Caucasian.
Okay.
So yeah, it messed him up. It messed him up real bad. Like after this happened, he got into all the gothic thing and everything.
He experienced other phenomena after this.
Not me, but I think he did. I tried to talk to him about it. He said he's seen a couple other things, and he wouldn't go into anything about it. He wouldn't even talk. He won't even talk to me anymore. So.
Well, you know, and that's the scary part of all this, I think, for a lot of people is when you start, think about it. When you start messing with, dimensional openings or even your own dimension, widening your awareness of the spectrum, you know, all sorts of things can walk through, so to speak. And we know that, you know, there's phenomena out there that indicate that there's things that will latch on and follow people. There is that risk. There is, you know, there is that possibility, you know, in this realm of stuff. And that sounds like a real classic example, episode.
Okay, guys. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Kev, thanks for the call. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. Interesting story.
Oh, absolutely.
And what's interesting is that, he experienced it with someone, and other people saw them experiencing it and did not see this girl they were talking to, and yet they observed that the two of them were talking to someone or to something.
Yeah. Yes, yes. That's a touch of it that really gives you pause.
Yeah, and
my experience.
Mm-hmm. We didn't ask him if it was near the carousel.
You're right. You're right. If he's listening, tell him to send me an email or you an email to answer that question. You know, I would be really interested to know if it was near a carousel. With my experience, I had two friends with me, and they were with me, and they met this man, Alfred, and, they can vouch that it indeed happened.
Yeah,
and
they saw him too, huh?
Pardon?
They saw him too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We rode a ride with him. We rode Small World with the man and talked with him on a bench, and, it was male and female friends that were with me, and, of course, the female just thought I was a wonderful guy because I gave the old guy my passport ticket, pinned it on mm-hmm. his lapel and let him have it for the rest of the night, and,
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
First name is Tim, and I'm calling from New York City, a couple blocks from the Empire State Building.
Fantastic, Tim.
Actually, a couple of interesting things here about Disney. years ago, I put out a small little newsletter on UFOs. It had a pretty big circulation. There was a fellow in Trenton who put on UFO conferences on a pretty regular basis. And he went and he rented a hotel on Disney's property. You know, they have some of these hotels down there, themed hotels and so forth and so on. And he rented a banquet room in order to have a UFO conference and advertise it in several publications, including our own. And in the ad, he put in little characters of Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and so forth and so on. And I don't even know how they would happen to have gotten a copy of our little publication, but someone on their staff, who was a legal representative but not a lawyer, wrote a semi-threatening letter saying that we had no right to use, or not us, but he was running the event, you know, event, but it wasn't our publication, had no right to use Disney's name or image in regard to this, even though he was technically renting the property there. So I do know that Disney does protect its name and images very, very closely, and apparently they have quite a staff that does nothing but comb through different publications looking for...
Tim, wouldn't you expect a very large corporation like that to do that?
Well, yes, I can't say that this person was necessarily in the right, but he was paying for use of one of the banquet and hotel facilities there on the Disney property. Maybe he should have asked specific permission about doing it, but it seems a really minor infraction to sit there and go through, like I say, all these little publications to find something like that. And he did hold the event, and several hundred people came up or showed up, or 100 people showed up, and nothing ever came from it. But I do understand that they do protect their images and their name very, very closely.
Mm-hmm.
This is not to say, actually, that Disney wasn't interested in metaphysical and offbeat, because obviously most of his the films and products have to do with everything from, you know, witchcraft, and so it has an occult or metaphysical angle to it. In fact, I understand the movie Magical Mountain or Mystical Mountain, the first one with Mickey Mouse, where he actually got the idea for that was his visit to Sedona. Apparently, Sedona, Arizona, this is one of the places that he visited on a pretty frequent basis during his early life, I understand. And I've been told that that was... you know, uses the backdrop for that particular movie. Also, you know, Disney, and this is something quite a few ufologists know about, Disney did a UFO special. They had opened up a ride down there with an alien theme to it, and they actually put together a UFO special based on, you know, actual historical events and so forth, and showed that on TV rather late at night, I guess paid for the time, to promote this particular ride in the park, and mm-hmm. in fact, we did go to a screening of the film, and it was quite interesting and pro UFO.
Huh?
So I
didn't know that.
Pro and con there on the subject. Disney mm-hmm. apparently was interested in things of this nature.
Tim, I want to thank you for the call. Very informative.
Well, we enjoyed the program very much.
Thank you.
A bit of insight there that some of it I'd never heard.
Yeah. I will say this, that when you go to Disneyland, I don't know if they still have it, but when I went, they had it. There's a theater that you can go into that they were showing, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids
mm-hmm.
in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And you put the 3D glasses on and... It's just amazing. It really is very futuristic and really cool.
It's a lot of fun, you know. And they still have some great things there that are fun, and I think they're trying to fix what's not working, you know, so
mm-hmm.
to speak. But when you really study their history, you know, the prior regime, it never would have got there in the first place. It never would have got to the point where it needed fixing. And that was really, and this is my opinion here, that was really a product of you know, focusing on making Disney a big, huge, giant conglomerate. And, you know, anytime they'd make an effort on anything, it's got to be tied in with promoting the living hell out of something. I'm one of those who's not very happy with the taking out the submarine voyage and replacing it with Finding Nemo. That's a turnoff for me. And here's why. Tomorrowland, and just real briefly, Tomorrowland's original vision didn't necessarily, like a lot of other things in the park originally, didn't always necessarily tie in with some specific Disney product. And Tomorrowland was, you know, not specifically, you know, the place for the little kiddies, okay? And I would say that Fantasyland was, of course, and then now it's extension, Toontown, you know, there's plenty of places for the little kiddies. And, you know, they could have taken the submarine voyage, which was really a beloved ride, and just updated, you know, the technology like, you know, they've done now, and still kept it something that appealed to, you know, adults as well as kids. But in that true style of the regime that was running things at the time, oh no, it had to be tied in with, you know, a DVD that they could sell gazillions more copies of. So now we're left with Finding Nemo, another thing that, you know, the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds are going to love, you know, and the parents are going to endure for their kids. But, you
well,
know,
yeah, but look, I mean, really, Disneyland is more for the kids.
You know, actually, its original concept, that Walt would have argued with you. He would have said, hey,
really?
Wait a minute. It's for the kid in all of us. In fact, I believe he used those words on more than one occasion. No, Disneyland was not really originally for the kids. That's why there was the area where there were things, you know, more for kids, and there was the area where things were just a little bit for bigger kids. No, Walt's vision was that it was for the kid in all of us. You know, I will say this, at least Finding Nemo is a Disney movie. I'm about ready to, you know, offend all the Star Wars fans, but, you know, as a Disney fan and, you know, someone who's loved the park and stuff like that, what the hell is Star Tours doing in Tomorrowland? I'll tell you what it's doing there. Pure commerce. That wasn't a Disney movie, and as much as I enjoy the Indiana Jones ride with my son every time we go there, I have to say, what the hell is Indiana Jones doing in Disneyland? That wasn't a Disney movie. You know,
well,
you
but saying? here's another thing. All of that came about after they moved the carousel, right?
Yes, it did. Thank you for bringing that up.
And the carousel, if your research holds any water, mm-hmm. the carousel was a key component in generating the Disney mystique there.
Absolutely. And I say that based on the stuff you're going to read in the book and other research. Absolutely, that carousel was key. It is the key to the kingdom and what it was doing on that intersection. In our theory, what we're proposing, what it was doing was something really extraordinary, and that was literally creating the mystique. We point out in the book how the carousel would have done that in conjunction with these lines, and I think, you know, you read the book, I think you'll see what we mean, you know, about its potential and why
you know, we're headed into a break. We've got about 2.5 minutes here. But, see, I think it's important to point out to folks that we're not talking about a lot of woo-woo stuff here. If there is an active volcano, and by active I don't mean that it's erupting, but I mean it's alive, it's active, and you know, there's a little bit of lava bubbles up in the crater every once in a while. You walk up there, you feel the heat. When you get close to it, you feel the heat. That's not woo-woo.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, when you talk about these ley lines and that these are lines where there's electromagnetic energy emerging from the Earth along these lines, if you walk up to these and spend time with these, you would, I would think,
experience some kind of change. You would feel a change of some type, just like walking up to the heat of a volcano. You perhaps would not feel heat, but you would feel there would be some kind of change. And absolutely, then if you magnify that,
mm-hmm,
with some type of device and scatter it around, then certainly everyone standing within range would feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what your book talks about. Your book talks about the carousel being used, and you talk about how it would be used, but the carousel being used to magnify the energy emerging from three ley lines.
Intersected. See, mm-hmm, the intersection itself triples the energy flowing through that point, triples it, and then you place the carousel or any spinning device at that point, and you are exponentially expanding the possibility, the amount of, you know, the energy that you're dealing with,
mm-hmm,
and what you can do with it.
All right, now we have to take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll continue taking calls at 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. I'm convinced there are more people out there that have experienced something strange, like Kevin talked about, and like Walter talks about in his book, at these amusement parks that may be related to these ley lines. So we'll take your calls when we come back from the break, but I also want to get into another possibility of these ley lines and the carousels built on top of them. We'll be back right after this.
Well, I'm on my way.
get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. My guest is Walter Bosley. And, Walter, let's go straight to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Oh, I love that. All right. 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092 is the toll-free number. You will know that you have made it through when you call that number and your telephone stops ringing in your ear. You know you are on hold. All right. Now, Walter, let's talk about this possibility. Because I read your book and found it fascinating. And but from what you say in the book about Walt Disney himself, it would seem that he most likely was not aware of any sort of strange properties being built into the theme park. I mean, it seems that way from what you've written. Do you think it's possible that this was discovered and that is why they decided to take the carousel away from that spot?
That's very, very possible. You know, just because they were redesigning Fantasyland did not mean that they necessarily had to move the carousel. When you look how far, here's the carousel was originally centered. Excuse me. It was originally over where now the Sword and the Stone stands.
Okay.
It was you know that many feet forward. I say forward toward the castle, and that is actually the position of where the intersection is. It's interesting that they've put the Sword and the Stone right over that spot, kind of like a key and a lock, you might say. That's something that I'm exploring. I'm neck deep in some research, you know, related to those kinds of things. But it's just kind of, it seems, and my research indicates that they just, you know, it fits the King Arthur symbol, and it might just be, you know, some cute little thing that they did. But that's where the carousel originally sat. And it's very possible that they, you know, maybe they were getting reports from not just guests, but from employees. You got to remember, that's a 24-hour operation. When they're not open, they're doing maintenance.
Uh-huh.
And many, as the book talks about, many employees have had really creepy experiences, particularly over on Tom Sawyer's Island in other parts of the park. Now, what's interesting is there have been some people die at the park. They have this policy where I guess they've got an agreement, but according to my sources, according to our sources for this book, if there's a death at Disneyland, the death is not declared until they get to the hospital, usually Anaheim General, so that it reduces the number of, you know, deaths, so to speak, at the park. Now, that's according to sources. I'm still trying to, you know, get, you know, a complete final confirmation that would please everybody on that.
Yeah.
But there, you know, there's been people who've died at the park. As we know of some of them, and there's plenty of ghost stories associated with the park. And if you're dealing with a device like what we're talking about, and you are widening the spectrum or opening portals and things like that, well, you know, it stands to reason you're going to have, you know, maybe some ghosts or what we think are ghosts coming through.
Let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Charles in Albuquerque.
Yes, Charles.
Well, this is certainly an interesting discussion.
It's different, isn't it?
It is different. I know that something must be weird going on at Disneyland because My wife grew up in Orange County and spent many hours of her childhood there, and she's definitely very weird. I can say that because she's not listening.
Well, you know, you still got a little time to buy flowers here before Valentine's Day and make up for that.
Oh, that's right. I'm going to have to make up for that.
That's right. Charles, what do you think about the apparent synchronicity of the events that Walter talked about, things that weird stuff that's happened to him and his book here in the last couple of weeks? What do you think?
Well, I think perhaps that it's exactly as he thought at first, an apparent synchronicity. You know, it seems to me that there is as you pointed out yourself, Walter, a logical, rational explanation for everything that's happened, which doesn't include any sort of nefarious conspiracy.
Right.
And so it could very well be not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it could be. You know, it's and I recognize that. You know that, and what that does is that sends us down, one of those very entertaining and intriguing roads of really analyzing the very nature of coincidences, and at what point
perception?
Yeah, at what point does coincidence become so numerous that wow, something's going on here? A lot of traditions say, God has a sense of humor, and
oh, he does. He made you, Walter.
Oh, yeah, exactly. he's a trickster. Yeah, I mean, think about it. Let's have fun here for a minute. Let's say you're God, right? I mean, I'm sorry, but you'd have a hell of a lot of fun goofing on us.
Well, and even if you're some demigod that might be able to do something.
Yeah.
Well, now
exactly.
See this. Let me throw this out for the two of you,
mm-hmm.
Because I know Charles has a very analytical mind. So let me throw this out. What if all of this is, from the standpoint of that publisher, it's just coincidence? They just decided, we don't want to talk to the guy. What if then there's no connection with anything over at the PR company, but they've decided, we don't want to put that on? But orchestrating all of that, perhaps, is some energy that has come, that has spun up out of those ley lines,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't want to be talked about.
It's shielding itself.
Oh.
What do you think, Charles?
I don't know. Talking about those ley lines, how do we know a ley line is there? Is it something you could measure, like the heat coming off a volcano?
Yes. In my experience, I personally...
Sort of meter up to it?
Pardon?
Could I hold some sort of meter up to it and find where it is that way?
Well, a gentleman who's been on this show is putting together just that. Jeff Harvey, who's been on here, is putting together a little device to be able to do just that, to assist with our further explorations of this. So, yeah, there are those who believe, and I don't see why it's unreasonable to believe that it couldn't be measured. I can tell you that I have personally stood on a spot where a ley line's, the energy line's been identified, and, I almost hate to say it on some levels, but I experienced a physical phenomena. It was incredible.
Well, let me throw this into the mix in
yeah.
answer to Charles' question. Mm-hmm. Over at Stonehenge, I saw this on a documentary. There are people who have identified them in a couple of ways. One way was with a meter that measures some kind of electromagnetic stuff, and one was with dowsing rods, and they both identified the same line.
Mm-hmm.
I can't argue with dowsing rods. I've experienced that myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretty strange the way that works, but they seem to work.
I'd like to throw in that when I experienced this, it was it was kind of a thrilling little moment. It wasn't. It was just something that it was like, hey. It was like feeling a. I'm not saying it was like physically feeling a breeze, but it's the same thing as if, you know, when you're standing outside and you feel a sudden breeze blow past you, you feel that moving on your skin. You know you've experienced it, and you go, "Oh, a breeze just blew by. Oh, that was kind of pleasant." It was very matter of fact like that. I was standing on one spot, and I'm like, "Hey, my feet and lower legs have suddenly gotten warm." Warmer, and I stepped off, and it went away. I stepped back, and it returned. And it was just the individual that was with me. I was just, hey, how about that? You know, gosh.
Yeah, well, Kevin knows all about cold spots.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, thanks for the call, Charles, and I wish you the best as you patch things up with your wife.
Just remember, it's a small world after all.
It is indeed. Thanks for the call. All right. What about that possibility that I mentioned? You know, what if there are energies that have already been spun up through this thing that just don't want to be revealed?
Well, you're venturing into some very interesting territory there.
Yeah, I am.
And
that's why I make the big bucks.
And you're venturing into some very interesting territory there that I'll, from my personal experience, you know, I'll say that that's definitely a possibility. The way you put it was some mundane things can be orchestrated to achieve an end. And, you know, that's a very good possible explanation.
We have to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue. 1-800-289-1092. We'd love to hear your comments about this.
Tonight.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
We are back. We're talking with Walter Bosley, and we're talking about his research and book that deals with some possible strange stuff built into Disneyland in its original construction. Not that way now, but up until what year? 19 what?
Oh, 82.
1982.
Between the opening of the park in 55 up until 1982. 7 years.
Some people... You know, see, this would not be too strange. It would not be too big of a leap because remember Tim from New York that called?
Mm-hmm.
And he said that Walt Disney used to spend a lot of time in Sedona.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but I guess he did.
Let's say that's a fact. Don't know if it is.
Mm-hmm.
But Sedona is... People that deal with this kind of stuff say that Sedona has some vortexes,
right?
Vortices,
mm-hmm.
And that these are like portals into other dimensions, and that you know the people experience some kind of energy rush or something. I really don't understand it all, and I'm not belittling it. I'm just describing it in the best language I've got. All right, now, let's say that's the case and that maybe he was familiar, whether he experienced it or not, was familiar with the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Then it is a possibility that he may have known something about the possibility of a vortex there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe wanted it. I don't know. You know, he wanted the happiest place on earth, right?
Well, exactly, and as we kind of touch on in the book, you know, present in the book, let's say he was aware of it, and you know, just like what you said, he wanted the happiest place on earth. He wanted people to go in there and experience being in another world, at least for the few hours or the day they were there, and that's what we say this device would certainly have done, and that might have been the main purpose it was put in there, to simply create that feeling that you had left the real world, so to speak, and you were in this other dimension. And, you know, I got to tell you, certainly for children, but, you know, also when I was no longer just a 5 or 6 or 7 year old, you know, I felt that going to Disneyland. It really, you know, would feel like you walked through the gate there and you left it all behind, and it had its own feeling, which I personally have not experienced since, you know, the 80s.
All right, now, you remember when we talked with Kevin and he told us about this strange event that happened to him in Canada at an amusement park? And he has emailed me, and it says, when you ask about the carousels, I got chills. Yes, at both sightings, if I remember correctly, there was a carousel at both locations in the park. He said, I know because I rode on one during the second encounter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So... It might be worth looking at ley lines in Canada, huh?
Well, you know, all over the world, and it is being looked into. Greg and I did this first book. It's called Latitude 33, subtitled Key to the Kingdom, because this first book is the initial look at it and looking specifically at how it applies to Disneyland and the evidence, you know, surrounding just specifically Disneyland to present, you know, kind of the idea of what we're talking about. And then we will go on to a bigger book that does just that. It talks about all of this phenomena, what we're talking about here in other places around the world. I will say this. You know, it's said that Marco Polo said on his deathbed, "I have not written about half of what I saw or did." I just kind of want to throw that out there as a thought. You know, if you're kind of getting the feeling that there's something bigger, you are absolutely right. And but for now, we've started with, as far as, you know, what we're presenting out there for people to read and consider, we thought it might be prudent to start with this one location to kind of introduce folks to the concept. But you can definitely look forward to more.
So are you saying that there are other locations around the world also at latitude 33?
Yes, and where interesting key things have happened, not all happy, not all related to amusement or fun. Some of them are related to some key, for instance, like political events that others, not us, but others have pointed out some very bizarre little facts connected with them. You mentioned one earlier, the JFK assassination. It happened at 32.7. It essentially happened at latitude 33. And, you know, I don't even need to go into all the things, you know, that's already been talked about, but I would point you to James Shelby Downard, I think, is the one who wrote about the killing of the king. And that's way too big to get into here. You know, just kind of look into that yourself. But, yeah, absolutely. Latitude 33 is a worldwide phenomenon, and there are phenomena galore associated with it, greatly within the zone between 30 and 40 in general.
Mm-hmm.
But at 33, there's some notably very interesting things.
And well, we're very rapidly approaching the end of the show. Let me say that I sincerely hope that these events that have happened to you within the past 2 or 3 weeks here are just coincidence, synchronicity. I sincerely hope that it's not anybody's campaign of suppression. Honestly, on the one hand, I see a couple of things happen. One thing happens, okay. Two things happen, now I'm going to watch. You know, I'm going to pay attention. But I hope that it really doesn't set up a pattern, and I hope things smooth out for you. And certainly we wish the best to your mom as she's recovering in the hospital.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I want to say, too, that I'm at the point where I'm at the, okay, I'm going to watch this level. I'm not at the point where I'm, you know, making sure all the doors and windows are barred and looking over my shoulder every time I go to the grocery store. I mean, you know my background, Jesus. You know, I've had men wanting to cut my head off in Afghanistan and things like that. So, you know, hey, it you get used to stuff. But, you know, my awareness level is up, and it's up in the spirit of, the game is getting interesting. The game's afoot.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm enjoying the hell out of this, even though I will tell you there's elements of this that are serious damn business. And, you know, it's just a subset of something larger, of a larger reality.
Well, I wish you the best, and I hope you stay safe, and I really hope it's all just some coincidences that have happened, and like I say, I hope it smooths out for you, and I hope that your book does very well. As I say, I read the book today, thoroughly enjoyed it. It is it does cause one to raise an eyebrow or two, and it's got a lot of good information in it. Interesting information, and I'm looking forward to the sequel that broadens the scope. So tell us, we've got just a few seconds left. Tell us where to go to buy the book.
Well, right now, you've got the link on your site that takes you directly to Lulu, which I'd like to emphasize with everyone is just the means by which we're having it printed and distributed. Okay, it's from Corvos Books, the publisher called Corvos. And you can go to lulu.com, put in the title, Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom, by Greg Bishop and Walter Bosley. But also, in another, anytime this week, we're going to have a new LCL page up at Motimorphic.com. Motz.com, which is Michael Motz's fantastic page, and he's a writer who touches on some of these things, and you really need to look at his stuff. But his site is, like I said, Motimorphic.com, which is Motimorphic.com. And while you're there, you can also download the free of charge. I produce this my own time.
Gotta hurry. We're out of time.
Magazine, Lost Continent Library Magazine, also at Motimorphic.com.
All right. Stay on the line with me. Ladies and gentlemen, it is that time, and I have to say, my friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too. You call me whatever you want, okay? Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back tomorrow night. Until then, so long, everybody.